Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. That was our dear friend Pato Banton, and he was singing Destination Paradise. Pato is in Colorado right now on tour. If you want to know more about Pato's tour, you can go to patobanton.com and check it out. And our thanks go out to him. Our destination is paradise. And this week on The Cosmic Citizen, we are following up on our show last week. We were talking about the phenomenon of the 1111, and I call them the 1111 wake-up calls. And it's something that people all over the world are experiencing. And we wanted to give some time to that. My great and dear friend and co-host, Crystalyn Beek Larson, is on the phone with me. Christy, are you there?
Good morning. Yes, I'm here. Bright-eyed and bushy-tailed.
I love it. And we also
have a great song to start the show with today.
Oh yeah, you can't beat Pato. But you know, and I want to introduce our guest without further ado. But first of all, I'd like to say that please hold your calls. You can call and listen, friends. I just want you to know though that I'm not going to be answering any calls for the first hour, because we want to give George a chance to really tell his story and his experiences with the 1111. When I first met George years ago, it must have been in the mid-90s, he called me and told me about the 1111 Spirit Guardians of the Midway Realms. And I told him, oh, that has to be the 1111 Loyal Secondary Midwayers. And he was definitely intrigued, and at that time he had just found the Arantia book, so he went and read up all about it. And George has quite a following. He puts out a daily post, spiritual guidance. He spends a lot of time with his friends that he calls the platoon, and the Midwayers help him. The 1111 is helping him a lot. So without further ado, I want to introduce you to our good friend George Matthew Barnard. George, are you there?
I'm there. Thank you very much, Paula. That is a very nice introduction. It's good to talk to you after all these years. It was 2000 when I turned up in your place, and I must say, once again, you have been wonderful hosts there for the time I was there. And so were many people, really, as I traveled the U.S., in 2000, and it's more in 2001 and 2002. But I'm more or less anchored in this place now because we're dealing with thousands of people, really. Five channeled messages go out every week, sometimes a little more, sometimes a little less. And we're anchored to these chairs and these computers and telling people that all think they are the only one that ever sees this 1111 on a regular basis. In fact, there are millions all over the world, and it doesn't matter what color they are, it doesn't matter what nationality they are, it doesn't matter what religion they follow. The angels make absolutely no difference there. Of whether you are Hindu or Buddhist or some shade of Christian or whatever you are, they let you know that they are there. They let you know that they're prepared to talk to you, that they prepare to guide you, that they are teachers. And these guys have IQs that run in the thousands. They are absolutely brilliant, basically talking baby language to us, comparatively speaking. If you are getting an 1111 signal, or other numbers like it, because they will vary it to suit, to let you know that you are dealing with intelligence, you can find a way of contacting them through meditation. You can find a way of seeing them in some instances, which has been my forte, rather than hearing them. I had a lot of work to do to be able to hear them properly. But I've been seeing them since I was about 7 years old. And I'm 71 years of age now.
Can I ask a question, George, about that when you were about 7 years old? I would love at some point for you to tell us about that first experience. But before going there, I wondered, you know, so many young children have what we call imaginary, invisible friends who they play with when they're very young.
Mm-hmm.
And what is your thought on that? Do you think that many of them are, in fact, seeing a real being there, or do you think it's mostly their childish imagination?
No, they're likely be seeing the cherubim that are looking after them. I think we generally lose that capacity to transcended dimension. I think it's the totally relaxed and safe mind of the child that allows them to catch a glimpse or to in somehow sense that they have companions. I think we should never talk them out of their imaginary playmates, and in fact we shouldn't even call them imaginary. I'm still watching them at my age, and it is on rare occasions that I can actually glimpse something as far removed, someone as far removed as a cherubim. Generally, it is restricted to the secondary midwayers that are much closer to us, and on occasions, the primary midwayers. Seraphim may show up no better than a bunch of light, but I think children have an ideal opportunity to make friends with their caretakers, their cherubim caretakers.
Well, you know,
well, then go on with your... Sorry, go ahead, Paula.
There's only 1,111 loyal secondary midwayers, and they're special because they have power over material things. The Arantia book says they're just outside the realm of our human vision. And, you know, when things have happened, like people mysteriously were falling off a cliff and hands pushed them back up, I've heard stories about a guy in prison who was literally stopped dead in his tracks. He was going to kill somebody else, and he couldn't because he was stopped by a being so gigantic that it dwarfed him, and he had to have weighed 300 pounds. He was a bodybuilder. I've heard, you know, the book tells us that the stories of Daniel being let out of prison, and when the doors mysteriously opened, that it was the secondary midwayers that did that. And they're critical in terms of helping the guardians, the angels, preserve the life of those who have a destiny on the planet.
I can add something to that. I can add something to that, and it's a personal experience in May. I think either May or June of 2001. I was introduced to one of a number of 10 in the group, secondary midwayers, and that is our Matthew. He is less than 3 foot tall, and he is only one of 150,000 additional helpers that we have on this planet right now. As well, the age 73 are back with us, including Beelzebub, but he doesn't go by that name. They have been all sorted out and rehabilitated. So we've got a lot more. This is all part of the correcting time. That's what we're smack in the middle of now.
Okay, so we have a lot more helpers than we think, huh?
A lot more, and a cherubim and a seraphim and even the occasional Maroncha companion that is spending time on this world can 1111 prompt us. It explains why, and they showed me this some time ago. This must be about 6 months ago or 8 months ago, and I asked, what is happening? You know, are we up to scratch with the thousands that we contact with our list? Or what is going on? And they said, yes, you are definitely doing good. We have no complaints. And my question about the number that are being prompted worldwide was shown to me in a barometer, and I watched it rise. And it blew me away because we were just over 75 million worldwide.
75 million what worldwide? People who are getting the
prompt? That are being prompted.
Oh.
That are being time prompted.
Now, George, I really want to know what your take is on the time prompts. I call them the wake-up call, but that's just my concept. What do you think they mean? What does it mean to you?
It is a wake-up call. It is saying, hey, you know, we're saying hello. There are other creatures around that you generally cannot see. We want you to live a more spiritual life. We can be your teachers. And that's what they are. They're brilliant teachers.
Oh, my. So true.
They are incapable of forgetting things. And having been around for, what is it, something like 37,000 years, they know so much it is scary. They are absolutely brilliant.
Do they have the ability, George, to be all around the planet? Because at least before the you say that there are many more who have joined them recently, but just prior to that, when it was just the non-rebel midwayers that were functioning on the planet, how was it that they were capable of being in so many places at the same time and to be available, you know, just when you need them, when you call? How is it?
Well,
that they
it was in 1972 when I asked what they were doing, where they were, where they were going, and they showed me a network almost similar to ley lines all over the planet. And that pattern has got so much cross-hatching in it now. It is incredible. There were large cities where there was no contact personality at all back in 1972. And there are many, many set up everywhere. It is a pattern of incredible complexity. Yeah, they are doing their job. They're pulling the people in.
I want to share a story because I didn't get a chance to share it last week, and it's something that always comes to my mind whenever we're discussing midwayers. It was Courtney Brown wrote a book in the 90s called The Cosmic Voyage, and it was about psychic remote viewing. And back in the 60s, a group of government operatives were called in because the Russians were doing this psychic viewing. The U.S. started a whole program and called in some psychic remote viewers and trained them on these protocols. Courtney Brown calls it the protocols. He was actually trained by a person who was in this group, this original group in the 60s, and this person took him through this whole drill and taught him these protocols. Well, one day he brought him, and one of the things that the remote viewers would do is they would look at an envelope. They wouldn't know what was in the envelope. And they would go to view it. And then once they had gone to view whatever the subject matter in the manila envelope was, and they all had a concept of what it was, then they would share what they all saw, and then, only then, would they open the envelope. So this operative took Courtney Brown through this process, and Courtney Brown went to this place and saw these very busy beings. And he could perceive them very clearly. And he said when he showed up in their space, they looked at him very startled because they're not used to people coming to view them that way. And that's kind of what they communicated to him. And he was amazed by this hubbub of energy and activity that was going on around these beings. He was just astonished by how busy and diligent and industrious they were, just working, and he was clearly guided in his inner ear that they were working for humanity. Mm. And when he came back to his space, when he came back from the psychic remote viewing session, the operative told him, okay, now open the envelope. And he opened the envelope, and this is all in his book, The Cosmic Voyage. He opened the envelope, and there was one word on a piece of paper. The word was midwayers.
Yeah.
And Courtney Brown was just astonished by this, and he said, my gosh, who are they? And the operative told him years ago when we were in the very first trials and the very first processes of developing this, a fellow in our group came in with this name in a manila envelope, like I just gave you. He had been reading this book called the Arantia Book. And
right.
He wanted to see if we went and viewed these beings, if they're real. So he was just kind of giving this to us as a test. He said every single one of us had the exact same experience that you had. We went and viewed them. We saw them, and they communicated with us.
Yeah.
And so I just want to share that because I find it very interesting. We humans tend to believe only in what we can see. But there are two realities, the seen and the unseen.
I can tell you this for sure. One of the reasons why they picked on me did they pick on me or did I pick on them? I think it was both ways. But one of the reasons why they did pick on me is because I am visual. Because I would have just thrown them out. I mean, psychology of all kinds is my background. I mean, what kind of disembodied voice would I be listening to with that as a background?
Yeah.
They had to show up.
Right.
They had no alternative but to show up. And fear is another factor. A lot of people are afraid of this 11-11 thing, you know? Does it mean bad news or what does it mean? So occasionally they do show up. Only if they know that you're fearless, only if you know that, if you already know what they are all about. It's an important thing, but I think one of the reasons why they made an extra effort to show up for me, and it's perhaps not as much talent on my part, but much more a need on their part, was for me to actually see them. And most of the ones that I know, I've got what? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 here written down that I know. The others are different celestials. Half of them I know exactly what they look like. I can describe them. And they needed to turn up. Or I would have just outright rejected them and lost a lot of time.
How would you describe them, George?
Well, they look like us. Somebody saying that they are giant in size, forget it. I think probably the tallest of them all would be Charmon. MNO6, Charmon, sometimes called Simone, but Charmon is the proper name. She would be 6'2", something like that. Tall, slender, Adamic looking.
Mm.
Dr. Mendoza definitely looks like a Mediterranean. He's somewhat shorter in size. ABC-22. He's red, he's a well-tanned red, and he would be about 6 foot.
Mm-hmm.
ABC-3, that is Beatrice of, who is that, Dante Alighieri's time? Are you familiar with Dante Alighieri's work?
No.
It's worthwhile picking up. It's definitely, well, you've heard of Dante Alighieri, haven't you? Of Dante?
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, well, one of his guides is Beatrice.
Okay.
And that is ABC-3. If you turn the letters inside out, you've got Beatrice. ABC tries. Beatrice. ABC-3. She's tallish and blonde, but she's not as tall as Charmon. The primary midwayer, Andrea, would not be more than about 5'8" tall, and they are androgynous, by the way. They look both male and female. All of the primary midwayers, you wouldn't know one from the other. As a human being, you wouldn't know one primary midwayer from another. You need to sense the feeling of them being around. It's soul felt, really. That's the only way I can describe it. There's another tall one that I've only got a description of, and that is, he goes by the name of Mongozui. He's a well-tanned yellow, and as far as I know, he is the big guy in charge of the Falun Gong in China.
So, I have to ask a couple things. What do they tell you is going on down here right now, and what do we, in one first question, what is going on right now, and what do we most need to know, human beings? And two, if they could have us do any one thing, what would that be?
Stop all the wars. Look after each other. You know, we're down there. We're very basic. You know, we've got to do a few things right that we're doing wrong, and stop fighting. Really. Does it come through in many channelings? Definitely not. Definitely not. They like to give us a positive message.
Well,
what we privately talk about. What we privately talk about often ends up with, you know, let's have no more wars. That is just so very, very important.
Yes.
Do they ever recommend ways to deal, let's say, in diplomacy, in certain places where we really are, where there really is some kind of a physiological crisis or a political crisis? Have you ever had advice, I would say, or do they pretty much avoid giving unrequested advice and sort of just let us
take care of? Between 1972 and 2000, it's getting a little last towards 2000, but starting in 1972, I was doing therapy full on with people that were either suicidal or in a post-traumatic stress disorder. They're heavy cases, you know. If somebody wanted to give up smoking, I wouldn't talk to them. I wouldn't bother. Or if they wanted to lose weight, you know, I didn't have time for that. I had a company to run. But the critical cases, the heavy cases, yeah, I did lots of them with the midwayers. And that was the difference with my channeling at the time. You know, I would be in Delta, and I would be talking to them, giving them personal advice. I wouldn't even know what I was saying. It was really when I traveled to the United States that on the one hand I taught people how to see them because nobody was looking at them. And they taught me, they assured me that this alpha level channeling is accurate enough. And I find, yeah, that is definitely so. But I prefer to go deeper most times. For a greater accuracy. So, did I answer your question?
Yeah, pretty well.
In a way, perhaps, you know, taking people, healing people, working with people one at a time, that's all they can do, too.
Yes.
Well, let you go on with more of your story?
Well, yeah, one of the midwayers that I came across, that was at the time when most of our guys, most of the ones from the Southern Hemisphere, and there seems to be some sort of division there. If you take a look at the equator, when this Southeast Asian tsunami thing was on. When was that? In 2006, something? Mm-hmm. You remember when that was on?
Mm. Not very well.
Most of our guys were there, and most of our receivers, we had six receivers at the time of messages, were not getting anybody to talk to. They were all there with the people that were dying, that the people that had to be assured that they were okay, the souls assured that they were okay, and being shipped off. And we got a French contingent. Everybody in the group was talking to a midwayer from France. The one that I was talking to was called Brusque, which means sudden or, yeah, brisk, whatever. Brusque. Just one channeling from that particular one. Our receiver in the United Kingdom also got a French one. Somebody in Michigan got a French-named midwayer to talk to. It was amazing. But I couldn't find any of our guys that we normally spoke with. They were all in Southeast Asia taking care of people that were drowning and people that had died and, oh, Lord knows how many souls hanging around trying to find out what had happened to them. Yeah, they're involved in that thing. 9/11 was another thing. We missed our midwayers. They were over there. They can actually help somebody live. It's touch and go. They can actually help somebody die if they're gonna go anyway. They got different rules to us. You know, we keep everybody alive no matter how they suffer.
Well, I think you've touched
okay. We're not going to touch on euthanasia here, but yeah.
No, probably not the direction we should take the show today.
No, I don't think so. I don't think so.
But I think that you made such an important point because you said they have different rules than us. And I think all of humanity could learn to see things from a cosmic perspective or from a more eternal perspective, the rules would change. For one thing, if we learn that we are eternal beings, and something that the Urantia book gave me that nothing can ever take away from me, I'm a child of God. I am an eternal being. God made it so. It's like the book says, I am unique in infinity without duplicate in eternity. And we all are. We all are. That's the beauty of it. Once we know that we are ongoing, this life is but the first step in a long, long ladder of existence. This is something the midwayers know that we don't know. And another thing they know that we don't know is that there is hope for humanity and that we will make it because evolution is a given and because God's plan will not fail and Jesus' promises will come to fruition when he promised that the meek shall inherit the earth. By golly, they shall. There is no, should be no doubt in anyone's mind. The midwayers know this. We don't. So you're right. Their rules are different. They have a sense of what's going on, what needs to be done. And they have priorities that we don't see. They don't think of us as getting just this one life and that's it. This is all you get. Go for the gusto. They know better than that. They know that this is just the first life for us and that we're going on from here. And they are the custodians of this planet, the permanent custodians of this planet. We need to wake up. One thing we need to wake up to is that. This is our home, but this is their home.
That's right, it's their home too. And they got different rules and they got different moral values. I want to tell you about one. This happened, something like about 1973 or something like that. I had a manufacturing plant and I I was working in my workroom away from everybody else, drawing artwork and stuff like that. And I heard somebody say, George will kill you for doing that. And I thought, you know, something is seriously wrong. And I went out there and I looked at the job that the team was working on, and somebody had an accident and ruined a couple of $1,000s worth of stock. And I said, okay, you go and order some more of that. You go and mix the ink for some of that. You go and do whatever and get going. I went back to my workroom. I hadn't lost my temper at all. I went back to my workroom and I said, well, I swore. And there's a midwayer there, and he said, there's no greater fool in any of our universes than he who uses the master's name in vain. And of course, at the time, I still thought these guys were ghosts, you know, or something like it. And I said, well, you must have been a good little Catholic boy, just like me. And he just shrugged and threw his arms up in despair. We had a hard time. I gave them a hard time.
That's
now, these days, we understand a little better what it is all about. I found a Urantia book in 1997 when I was doing another stint of psychology in my university, and it was a sale going on of all kinds of books that the library didn't want anymore, and I found a Urantia book. I opened it up and I leafed a couple of pages, and there it was, the 1111. Oh my gosh! Everybody already knows these guys. I think I'll go and shred all my manuscripts. And it turned up and said, hold on, wait on. That's how it worked too, you know. So, yeah, that's right. Of course. Why in the computer room, nobody ever sat next to me. It certainly wasn't my body odor, but there was somebody else there, you know.
That's another topic that I would love to have both of you discuss, because both of you have had that experience. And a friend of mine who was working with me last night said that in the last few weeks or the last few months, after going through a very painful separation and divorce, where she had been really afraid had a lot of trepidation, anxiety, about what it would be like in the future when she was separated and divorced, like how she would be able to live or sleep alone. And this was a very real and serious problem for her, that one that she didn't seem to be able to overcome through prayer or meditation or various types of calming methods to get her mind and her physical body to stop with the anxiety. And she said just recently she has had a sense that she's no longer alone in the house. She hasn't seen anyone or seen anything or seen even any evidence of someone tampering with things or moving things around. No tangible physical evidence at all. But she said she has suddenly felt that she wasn't alone in her house and she has been able to sleep. She's had some very peaceful, restful sleep. And I had asked her to help me prepare some things having to do with this 1111 article that I'm writing. And I was researching some study groups and some just a series of posts that someone brought to me on the midwayers from the Urantia book. And she was helping me to collate some things. And then she just sort of suddenly said, that must be what's happening to me now. I must be having, you know, someone physically here who I just can't see. But, you know,
that's
that
right.
I don't have to worry anymore. And I said, well, exactly. You don't have, there's nothing to fear. But anyway, I just wanted to use that sort of as a segue for both of you to talk about the experience of having a midwayer in your presence.
It's a good feeling. They can do a number of things, you know. With my wife, they generally stroke her hair for a moment, and that's how she knows they're there.
She feels them stroke her hair?
Yeah.
Oh, I've had that happen, George. Oh, my.
Oh, really?
It's incredible.
Yeah, well, everybody thinks it's an angel doing it, you know? And okay, you know, let's not take it away from the angels. They're doing a good job. But mostly it's the mid-wearers that reach out and touch you. We had one come in a couple of months ago, and I was like a bantam hen sitting on a dozen eggs, you know, getting ready to do this, meditation thing and wait for somebody to come in. And all right, it was taking them too long, obviously, you know, hurry up, George, and get going. And there was a loud knock on the ceiling. Not on the door, not on the window, no, on the ceiling, 8 foot up from the ground. They do that kind of thing. Let you know to hurry up.
They do remind you, and I can really appreciate, Crystalyn, your friend's experience, because all of my life I haven't been able to see midwares. I think I've seen them a couple of times in the middle of the night. And I think it's because I've woken up and my eyes were just, you know, I was in that state of mind, you know.
Right, you're right.
Where
you need to be ticking over at somewhere between 7 and 14 cycles per second, and that's how you wake up. I mean, it takes a little while to get out of that dream state to, I used to get a lot of messages from them. This is in the 50s and the 60s. What used to happen? I'll tell you, this is interesting. What used to happen? I'd be sitting at the breakfast table, probably with my second cup of coffee, and somebody would say, "Do you know, when you woke up, you said such and such and so and so and something else and something else and something else." And sure enough, you know, it might be a description of a patient that I had never seen before, but they would be hitting the place in the afternoon or in the evening. I can remember on one occasion I told my youngest daughter there'll be a skinny little lady turn up with red hair. She'll be very upset. I won't be home yet, but switch on the outside light and put her in the clinic. I'll probably arrive about 5 minutes after she's settled down, and it happened just exactly like that. But by lunchtime, I couldn't even remember I'd said that to her. That's this semi-sleep state. It took me a long time in the mornings to wake up, yeah.
Wow. Hmm.
And
well,
even,
you know,
today, even today, we can notice that. Say, for instance, we are through transmission, we are through channeling a message from whoever, mostly through a midware, unless it is Michael himself or Makaventa, they can get you whenever they want you. If I put the tape recorder down and maybe I go and have a cup of coffee or watch a show, I got to go and check with my wife as to who was there and was it okay, because I don't remember even who I have talked to. You're in a different state of mind. You flick from the beta level that you normally function in to the alpha level, and the two just don't agree. That's why so many people forget their dreams as well. Do you follow what I'm trying to say?
Oh, yeah.
I hope I made that clear. I tend to get a little abstract every once in a while, so just stop me when you're not following me. But that is what used to happen. I used to sort of climb out of bed and have something to say, and it would be very, very relevant to what would be happening in the rest of the day, during the rest of the day. And I'd have to be reminded of that after a second cup of coffee. Do you know what you said? You said such and such. Holy dooly, did I really? Yeah.
You know, I wanted to share the fact that, Chrislyn, you had asked me to share something about my experience with never being alone, and I have never felt alone my entire life. And I was explaining that I can't see them, but I can feel them, and I've always been able to feel their presence, the presence of spirit helpers. And I wrote a poem along those lines years ago, and it's real simple. I'll share it with you guys. It goes, "For all the silent words I've spoken in phrases that were full, unbroken, and meanings that no spoken word could say, alone I've poured my heart out, and every time I start out saying only what comes first for me to say. Though I never stopped to wonder who had heard my symphony in blue, for no human ear could have heard a single word. Oh, the words of rapture I have known, and all were spent while all alone, and yet I know gut deep somebody."
That's beautiful.
Thank you.
That's beautiful.
I know.
I've got to send you some of my poetry, too.
I would love to have
dig some out of my books. I think I've got about a dozen or so poems in there. And I didn't even put her name down on this list here. I made a list of things, a list of guys that I know. That is Athena. And she is a celestial artisan. And when she comes to help me, boy, there is poetry there, or drawings, or whatever. And we got all the history of this lady that is doing 1,000 years of celestial art in intuiting people to produce stuff. And she's known me since I was a kid.
Well, you know, and her, the Urantia book does talk about celestial artisans that come to be with children that are gifted. And that the minute that the universe recognizes that the potential of your gifts, and if they are true and exemplary, they will send a celestial artisan to work with a child who is gifted. Really cool teaching, I think.
Wow. Don't remember that. That's cool.
Yes, yeah. In the artisan's paper.
Yeah. It's a good thing. I was actually sometime around about the middle of the night or 1 o'clock in the morning driving a long distance to pick somebody up that had lost the use of their vehicle. And I was probably about, a mile away from my destination. And suddenly while I'm driving along, I hear this voice. I mean, I was relaxed, okay? I hear this voice. "It's me, George Athena. I have been with you all the time." Now, that message must have come through Midware, I'm sure. But that was something that explained to me why on occasions I can do some terrific artwork and on other days I just should give it away and let somebody do it for me. Yeah. Yeah, celestial artisan. And you can ask for one. You know, if you want one, ask for one.
I've also definitely had the experience of intervention when I've been about to do something really foolish, or perhaps I did do something really foolish, but the repercussion was diverted away from me. And that has been a full-time job for whoever has to watch out for me, because I'm just one of the world's greatest klutzes, you know? And
okay, your mind is somewhere else and probably doing better things than what the average guy does.
Well, and apparently I've been doing that all, you know, even since I was a child. I had so many ridiculous accidents that
you know, my family just started to take it all in stride. But, you know, before the age of two, I had already had, you know, several close calls. One of them was that I do not remember this, but it's been retold to me, and of course I still have the evidence of it in my body. But I was running across my father's desk, you know, when I was just learning how to get really quickly mobile, and I fell and jabbed a pencil into my eye. And it was a sharpened pencil, and rather than injuring my eye itself, it broke off in my eyelid. And of course, I was in quite a bit of pain and had to wear a patch for a while. I still have the little piece of lead in my right eyelid, and I frequently have people come and tell me that I have a spot of mascara on my eyelid, and you know, they try to brush it off. And it's like, no, that's pencil lead. And whenever I tell people, well, it's pencil lead, I get the strangest looks on their faces, like, how in God's earth did you get a piece of pencil lead in your eyelid?
Yeah.
But, you know, it frightened my parents half to death. But, you know, that kind of injury or that kind of accident is something that should have, and there's no explanation for why it did not cause me to lose that eye.
That's right. It broke off instead of somebody broke it.
Right. And there was another incident where I have no recollection, but was told that we're riding along in a vehicle, and I dropped my shoe out the door, out the window. And so I went out after it. So I basically fell out of a moving car, again, just as a toddler. And I got scraped up a little bit, but I didn't get seriously injured. And, you know, there were things like that that happened to me all my life. And if you ask any in my family, they would say, oh, she's just been a klutz her whole life. And I think how much effort it must have taken to keep me safe.
Yeah.
It would have been a tremendous amount of constant supervision. And I've been dealing recently with a few friends or a few clients who are quite suicidal. And I've been expressing that, you know, we do have spiritual resources very near to us, spiritual beings who love us so much that we can't even fathom it, and that they actually love us more than our own earthly parents. Because when your children are young, as a parent, you can only spend so many hours a day watching over them. There are always moments or sometimes periods of hours where they are separated from you. And as they get older, more and more time you're separated from your children. But how important it is to realize that their guardian angels and spirit friends love them even more than you do. Because they're with
Chris,
24/7.
Christy, you read that part where we were warned that a tree would fall on our house.
Right, right.
Yeah. And there have been instances when I've been on the road and I've been warned to either slow down or get right off the road. And on one occasion, there was a multiple pileup of cars, and I was unscathed. And if I hadn't been told, I would have been smack in the middle of it. So what is the reason? There is a job to be done. And maybe under those circumstances, you have a little more care than the average bear. But I don't know. I don't know. It's been extraordinary for me over all of my life.
You know probably as well as anybody that when you enlist, when you put your hand up and you go to work for these guys, they'll put you to work. And they take this stuff seriously. If you say to them, I'm willing to help you, they're going to put you to work, and you may be amazed how much work they have for you, because there's not that many humans that'll put their hands up. And
we've got about 280 individuals in this group now, in the 1111 Progress group, that have put up their hand and that are working on something. Most of them are healers. A few are channelers. There's about as many translators as what there are channelers.
Mm-hmm.
We're very, very thin on IT people. But
oh, yes, that was another question. I'm sorry to interrupt, George, but that was another question that I really wanted to ask you about the kinds of help that they are able to do through IT people. Can you expand on that a little bit?
Can I expand on that?
Right.
Well, I can't really say a great deal. You know, I was most comfortable with notepads and pencils. So it's more or less up to everybody else to take care of that part of the thing. We've got about 8 websites, and they're being taken care of. Sometimes they fall a little behind, but most of the time our archives are, you know, okay. There is a message board, and of course there is the listserv that goes out to thousands in about 4 languages, I think. We're doing 3 languages, and then some of our work is, yeah. No, there are 4 lists. 2 English lists, there is a French list, and there is a Spanish one.
So, George, I want to ask you a loaded question. And, you know, channeling is a phenomena that has increased since the early 90s. And I've seen a lot of it in the New Age movement. I spent a lot of time exhibiting the Urantia book at New Age expos. And I've sat in on live channeling. I've sat in on channeling panels where everybody on the panel channeled somebody. And in my experience, and even as a child, I realized something that is what I would say something in humanity that is very compelling and very seductive. I don't know anybody that wouldn't love to have the chance to have a celestial to have a cup of tea with, 3 cups of tea, and ask them all the questions in their heart. I mean, we crave, as humans, we crave to have this contact with the spirit realm. It's very seductive. Now, the problem that I have is it can so easily be taken for granted or taken advantage of. That propensity or that desire in humanity,
yeah,
can be manipulated and abused. And how would you recommend people, you know, deal with that, to be, you know, discerning? Because young people are and old people are particularly vulnerable, and they could be so easily misled and lied to. And a lot of times these channelers want to supplant themselves as the guru, and which again takes you away from the God within you. You know, the answers that we crave are in us. If we will just turn within to the great and grand and glorious bastion of peace, spirituality that lies within us, but so often we look outside ourselves. So do you have any advice about that or wisdom about that?
Well, I can say this for myself, okay? If I'm recording and I feel that I'm in a deep enough trance that whatever word comes through is safe enough, and by the time I'm through channeling, I got to ask somebody else whether it was okay, and yeah, it was okay. Of course it was okay, but I don't know. I don't know what I've said. I don't know what's come through. Then, yeah, I know that I'm pretty well spot on. That is an important thing. That tells me that I got it, right? It's come through. I've talked for a period of time. I don't know for how long. I don't know what came through. I may not even remember what celestial I spoke with, because what we know about 25 or 30 different celestials that drop in here, and then I know I've gone deep enough, and I know I can trust what I got. To others, I recommend meditate, journal, write it all down. Doesn't matter if you think it is rubbish, write it down and watch yourself improve as you go along. But just keep meditating on a regular basis. What am I going to say about people that channel? Well, I'm a writer. I write books. I don't read any. And I'm a channeler. I channel messages, and I don't read any others except the ones from my group.
Mm.
So how many people have applied to come and channel for the 1111 Progress group? Probably a dozen over the years. But, you know, if the spirit of truth doesn't tweak me that something is good news, you know, if it's not so felt that this is A1 okay, I don't want to know. I don't want to know them.
Right.
I just look after my guys. So how accurate are we? Take it for granted. There isn't a channeler in this world that will get every channeling from beginning to end 100% perfect. It's not on. Mm-hmm. It doesn't happen. You may not even know the word that they came through. But I can give you a good one that happened just a couple of days ago. Let me see if I can find it. I think I might have just stuck it on the list to go out. Let me just see if I can find it. That really, this is something that made me 100% sure that I got this bit right. Here, this is a midwayer belonging, I don't know his name or his number, a midwayer belonging to the angels of the churches, saying, "We are jasper and basalt, the touchstones of eons of time in the evolutionary reality of time-space soul purification test." And I thought, what on earth is that? And I put touchstones on Google, and indeed it says jasper and basalt stones have been used to scratch on gold and silver. And if you do that, it leaves a tiny, tiny, shimmering little trace of gold or silver behind on that dark stone. Now, that was totally the jasper and basalt and touchstone thing. I had no idea what it meant, but he got it, and I got it. Now, that makes me 100% sure that transmit typed up will be A-OK from beginning to end. And
okay,
you need to do that.
You said something. Yeah, you do. We need to discern, obviously. We need to discern everything. We need to discern the Urantia book, the Bible, anything that claims to be a spiritual teacher or truth giver. We need to, you know, put it through its paces and discern for ourselves whether we believe that is true or not. Ultimately, truth makes sense. Makes sense. Let me
tell you something. I was at a tremendous advantage over everybody else that ever got the Urantia book and just read it left brain. I got a book that I opened up one or two pages away from where it says the 1111 secondary midwayers, the 1111 secondary midwayers. I got that book for $1 at a market. Where the where the library threw away what they didn't want anymore. I paid a dollar. I dragged the book home only because a co-student of mine and myself put our hands on it at the same time, and she said, "C'est pour toi," which means that's for you. And I said, "This one is for me." And we didn't know. We just stood there, looked at each other, and laughed and wondered what on earth had happened. That was the Urantia book. I dragged it all the way out of town, back to the university, put it on my desk, opened it up, leafed two pages, and there it was. Now, I read that book in 6 weeks from beginning to end, and I tell you what, there was just so much in it that I had already learned from the midwares. No, no, I did not have to judge the Urantia book. That was all my birthday's presents come at once. Absolutely. Spot on.
Me too.
Spot on.
Yeah.
Well, listen,
I already knew
I
a lot of those things.
I wanted to ask you another question about your background with Christianity and your reaction to it. I seem to recall that you had felt some antipathy or discomfort with the Christian religion, something to do with your pastor. Can you tell us a little bit about what your background was religiously?
I was about 7 years old, and I went to see this pastor, which was one step up from the everyday kind of priest, and I told him I wanted to be an altar boy. And he looked me in the eye, and he shouted in my face, "No!" And he slammed the door shut. That's when I gave him away, and I gave the local bishop away with that. I gave the Pope away as well. I decided the whole church was no good. I'd already been told that the creator of all was, you know, sticking people in hell. So, yeah, I threw the whole thing out. And that is when the midwares became active.
Wow. Powerful moment.
Yeah. Yeah. Mind you, though, I had an older brother who questioned things in the Bible concerning some skeleton 3.5 million years old that had been found in Africa. And that didn't tally up with what the Bible said about how long the world had been there. So he helped me in a way, in that sense. But yeah, I threw everything out. It didn't make sense.
That's like what the Buddhists say, starting with beginner's mind. Starting with beginner's mind, whatever all the great sages and prophets and theologians have said, yeah, that's great, but what do you think? What do you think? And most people don't even ask themselves, well, what do I think?
Hmm. Yeah, I saw a black and white world, and all of a sudden this priest fellow turned everything to do with the Catholic religion black. And I knew that, you know, the Reformed Church wasn't much different from the Catholic ones. And then there were the Calvinists, and then there were the Lutherans, and then there were 35,000 other shades of Christianity. And forget it, most of them were about the same. Something else was going on. I didn't want to have anything to do with it anymore. But I did know, I definitely did know, that man Jesus had been there, for sure. I knew that.
Yeah.
I don't know where that came from. That's what I hung on to for a little while, and it wasn't long after that that the midwares had me do all kinds of things. I got instructed.
And what are some of the things that you were directed to do?
I don't know. I don't know if I should be embarrassed, but I certainly wandered around looking like a sentinel, which was what ABC 22 was all about when I first saw him. He had a most dangerous weapon there, and that was in 1972 when I came face to face with him, but I was imitating him when I was about 12 years old. My dad said if he can make a sharp spike on a lens like that, he can keep it. If he spears it through his foot, it can either stay there or he'll have to pay his own doctor's bill. I took 2 days to pound on a 1 pound bridge spike to turn it into a spear point, and I was well armed in case they came over the horizon and I had to take care of him. Yeah, he got me to imitate his job as a sentinel. And then
well,
the other things.
We've promised that we'd take some callers, and we've had some people patiently waiting. We've actually gone more than an hour to start. So can we take some callers?
Yeah, do what you like. I hope I can answer some questions, but can't
just
guarantee.
So you know, George, we don't. There's no screening process on Blog Talk. There's no way we know what they have to say. So it's just you know, you just take them and hope for the best. So we'll give it a shot.
It's good.
972, you're on Blog Talk. Area code 972, are you with us? Oh, maybe they're just listening.
That might be Lou.
It might be Lou, yeah.
Is it Lou? Is it you, Lou?
512, area code 512, you're on Blog Talk.
Hey, Paula.
Hi.
Crystal, this is Lisa. How are y'all doing?
Hi, Lisa.
Hey.
Doing great. How are you?
I'm fine. I'm on my way to Dallas listening in. This is just the most exciting show, I think, ever. I don't want to spend too much time, you know, with me talking, but George, I have been a follower of yours for, oh, I don't know, I'm guessing 3 or 4 years. You're vicariously the one that introduced me to the Urantia book. I signed up for your post, you know, the 11-11 progress group post, and was reading those for several months, maybe a year, not really even knowing what I was connected with, and got the inspiration. I think I read a transmission about the Lucifer Rebellion and just went, what? This may be a lot bigger than what I thought it was. It's a spiritual feel-good message I'm getting in the email every day. Anyway, Doug, you know, thank God for Google and start digging around and then discover Truth Book, you know, and the rest is history. Anyway, you've been quite instrumental in making some changes in my life.
It's like, good to hear your voice, Lisa.
Yeah, well, you too.
Are you driving there with great care?
I am. I am. I have a headset on.
We want you to read a whole lot more transmissions.
Okay, will do. Can I ask a quick question? I'd love to have your thoughts about something. I don't even remember if I had discovered you yet. I certainly had not discovered the Urantia book, but I was, this was 3 or 4 years ago, I was listening to some CDs at night put out by Doreen Virtue about angels, you know, getting to know angels.
Mm-hmm.
And at this time in my life, some really incredibly powerful things would happen to me at night when I was listening. And one of these that I described this experience to several people. Nobody has really, I guess everybody has an interpretation of it, but for what it's worth, I wanted to ask you. I'm laying in bed on my stomach, and I would get this, in a, I guess, a hypnagogic state or whatever, you know, this alpha state, and I had this feeling like my torso was just kind of, had so much energy in it that it was just splitting open. And like cracking open a coconut or kind of a nut, you know, and this, I just don't know how to describe it other than my incredible energy coming out or going into my body, and I had been opened up, like cracked open.
Yeah.
And I was shaking. I thought, you know, I was awake enough to be thinking, if I could see a picture of this, if it were being filmed, I would feel like I was in an earthquake, you know, that my body was literally just shaking up and down. Anyway, so that's, and it hasn't happened
and,
since then. It happened 3 or 4 times, you know, in a year's period, and it hasn't happened since. But
you might have been worked on.
Uh-huh.
You might have been worked on. There was there was, this is going back a few years, when mother and son were being worked on by a midwife, being readjusted in some way, and I can't really tell you what the readjustment was, but the interesting thing that happened there is an experience similar to yours, and then the lady heard that on this occasion they were lucky because her son was going to be worked on next, and they were virtually identical, so nobody had to think about what to do. They already knew what to do because she and her son, which apparently was a very unusual thing, were of a similar makeup and could be treated equally. There you are. Now, we live on an earth where there are lots of different types of people, you know. We haven't blended to be a chocolate color, let me put it to you that way. And therefore, every time they're starting to work with somebody new, they got to go through a period of trying this and trying that and trying something else. Mm-hmm. I've been a guinea pig for years and years, believe me.
Well, I'm always glad to serve. So,
so very often when somebody is doing the meditation and they want to go ahead and work it with these midwares, it is not always difficulty on their part getting through. Sometimes the midware is having difficulty as well. But it sounds to me like you were being readjusted.
Interesting. Well, I'd love to have the experience again. It was like nothing. It was supernatural. It was absolutely supernatural and fantastic. And one other quick thing that I had forgotten about, but y'all were talking about having the presence of midwares around you at that same time period. I would wake up several times, not actually open my eyes, but I would be laying there in bed, certain that there was somebody laying next to me. And the first time it happened, I was scared, you know, because I thought, I mean, I didn't open my eyes, but I could literally feel a body next to me, and I thought, did I leave the door unlocked and going through all this? And then I'd open my eyes, and of course there's nobody there, and then I couldn't feel them anymore either. Just that split second when I opened my eyes to see who it was, they're gone. And that happened several times. It was all around that same period too.
It's anyway. An interesting thing when my ex father-in-law died, he, after a time, turned up in our home, and we had one of those big door knockers, one of those brass door knockers.
Mm-hmm.
And it slammed against the door. There was a doorbell that rang, the telephone rang, and there was a rap on the window. And then he appeared for a moment on the landing. And he was checking us out. He was checking me out and was most surprised, and he was checking everybody else out, and then he just disappeared.
Interesting.
I saw him clear as day. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So
I had a psychic friend, by the way. Just an interesting note. I didn't know quite what to think of it, but she came to visit a few months ago, and she said, "Lisa, I've got to tell you, I live on some property about 10 acres in Texas," and she said, "There, I am seeing this, like, Indian warrior man just circling around the perimeter of your property like he's guarding you." You know,
right.
And I thought of ABC 22. I wondered. And I thought, well, I know I'm kind of insignificant, but there may be another one like him, you know.
Oh, there would be a number like them. The interesting thing that I find is that the ABCs are not all red, and the MNOs don't all look like Mediterranean. So you've got the one family, right? The A is for probably the father, the B is for the mother, and the C is the celestial input in turning that particular individual from a sometimes visible person into a continuously invisible individual. But the ABCs are not all red.
Hmm. Okay, so, I didn't know that.
But there were a considerable number of them. Of course, ABC-22 was with the Kiowa and the Comanche until, well, there's not very many of them left.
Mm-hmm.
Come to think of it, the first thing I told him was, he was on the wrong continent. This is Australia, for heaven's sake. You know, go find your teepee or your gravestone and stay there, you know.
Get back where you belong, yeah.
Yeah, what are you doing here? this is Australian. You're on the wrong end of the world.
Oh,
wasn't long after that I offered him a share in my business. He
yeah.
didn't take that either. They're still laughing about it.
You're right.
Yeah.
Well, that's all I wanted. You can move on to somebody else or just keep talking. I just want to thank you from the bottom of my heart. All of you folks there. You know,
you're awesome.
Significance
Lisa.
in my heart, in my life.
All
George,
right. Drive safely, Lisa.
Okay, we'll
see you later.
Bye-bye.
God bless you, honey. Thank you for being instrumental, George, in bringing Lisa into our realm. She is just extraordinary. And so here's another caller. Let's see what we have here. Area code 352. You're on Blog Talk, the Cosmic Citizen.
Hi, hello.
Oh.
Hello there.
Hello, everyone. Hello, George. This is Achilles from Florida.
Hi, Achilles. They told me you would be. They told me, what, half an hour before this all started that you would be online. How about that?
They're right on the money.
They don't miss much. They may have prompted you, actually.
Oh, that's wonderful. Yes, I see the prompt.
We're having some fun. We're talking midwares and, you know, the kind of midware side of all this celestial business. They're very human, did you know?
Yes, I've been listening very well. That's a lot of information I'm learning here, and I have to find the Urantia book and read that and some other things. But I know there's many other callers that want to speak, so I just have one quick question for you, George.
Well, I just want to say before you come up with that question, when you get the book, take a look at chapter or paper 77 and paper 114 first, because it deals with you and it deals with the 1111 prompt.
Okay, I definitely will. 77, 114.
Yeah.
Okay, wonderful. I will do that. My question is, I've had many different experiences. I don't want to go in too much length like everyone, you know, somebody has before me. You know, a lot of people have different experiences. My question is, I'm seeing the time prompts every day, incessantly, day and night, all times of the day, 11:11, 22:22, 44:44.
Yeah.
You mentioned that you're a visual person and you see them. Is that something that anybody can do, or do I need a special eyeglasses for that, or how do we do that?
Good one. Well, I think I explained earlier on in the piece that with a background in psychology, and I did industrial normal and abnormal psychology, you know, they had to do something to make absolutely sure I wouldn't throw them out. And,
right.
And, you know, so what is it? Is it a talent on my part? Yes, in part. Is it a talent on their part or a specific wish on their part to show up? That also applies. I think what they are mostly interested in is making absolutely sure that they don't scare you out of your wits by suddenly turning up.
Yeah.
And I think it's one of the things that Buckaventa Melchizedek told one of the receivers about George Bernard. He's almost fearless. And so I wouldn't ridicule them, but I definitely would have to see them to be sure that I wasn't hearing voices in my head and that there was really an individual there. So
right.
Will they show up? Yes. Yeah, definitely. But they might get you to do a fair amount of work before they actually turn up and talk to you. There are quite a few that are doing our visualization meditation technique that can see the midwares. Even if they can't make out the faces, they can make out their shapes. But generally, yeah, yeah, you've got that capacity.
Okay. Very good. Why not? I need to definitely step up my time spent for meditation and things like that. But I plan to follow, your guidance and do everything that you say so that I can improve.
Uh-huh. If you're creative by nature, that is one step forward in the thing. If you tend to be quite relaxed in your everyday kind of life, but whichever way you start on the meditation and the visualization, it'll go to where it's most needed. And I've had situations where people said, well, nothing has happened in the first 2 months, but boy, do I sleep when I go to sleep, and I haven't had a decent night's sleep for years.
Right.
So the process will help you, and it'll go somewhere, but it'll go where it is most needed.
Okay, wonderful. Well, I think I have a little advantage being I'm left-handed, so I have the right brain, right?
Uh-huh.
So
that's how I was born, and they turned me around. That is why I had an option. I could either become a total deviant or a clinical hypnotherapist. Kitty.
Yes, I hear you.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for calling, Achilles. We have another caller. Did you have anything else you wanted to say?
No, that's all. Thank you very, very, very much for letting me join in. And, George, I know I'll be communicating with you more often here soon.
Yes, that's correct. We've got a computer that is not doing very well, and we're having some difficulties. And, of course, the first thing that's going to happen is the list must go out.
Yes.
But we'll have the computer that we want set up sometime very soon, and we'll communicate more often.
Very well. Thank you again, George. Thank you, everyone, and you have a wonderful weekend.
All the best.
God bless. Bye-bye.
God bless.
Bye.
We have another caller, George.
Yeah. We can carry on.
Area code 407. You're on Blog Talk, The Cosmic Citizen, with George Bernard.
Hi, George. This is Irene.
Hi, Irene. How are you?
Good. Do you remember me?
Yeah, I remember you.
From Florida.
Absolutely.
Well, I just wanted to say I needed a couple weeks off from work, and all of a sudden I got it, and it's given me plenty of time to relax and meditate, and I still have Ophelius with me as well.
Brilliant. Wonderful. We might be hearing from him sometime soon. What do you reckon?
Yeah, I hope.
Yeah? Okay, well, do your journaling every day.
Okay, I will.
Absolutely. Hey, it's good to speak to you.
Yes, you too. And I'll get off and let somebody else come through as well.
Yeah, I'm so far away. You know, I know most people only by their email addresses and their names, but this is an opportunity. It's good to hear your voice.
Yeah, you too. Take care.
I love you plenty.
Thank you. You too. Bye-bye.
Bye.
George, we just had someone offer to help you in your IT work on the board. So later, remind me, and I'll put you two together. It's a very nice offer for volunteerism. So I just wanted you to know that.
Tremendous. Tremendous.
Yeah. So, I just think it's wonderful that you're doing this ministry, and that's essentially what it is, George, and you know that. I don't have to tell you that. But, what do you think you mentioned a couple times to keep journaling. Can you expound on that a bit?
All right. Okay. It's a matter of going into a meditative state to see what you can see or hear what you can hear, and jot it down, because we tend to look back at what we did in the past, and it's become pretty hazy. It is a good thing to go back to journals that are 2, 3, 4 years old and suddenly find parts in there which your own mind or your own soul will tell you, wow, that was channeled outright because I couldn't possibly have thought of that. And the process of writing the things down that come to mind are not always immediately recognized as having been superimposed by a dear friend that is there in the background. You follow what I'm trying to say?
I totally do. You know, the
you may in fact be channeling. You may in fact be channeling and totally unaware of it, and only in retrospect can you judge it as to precisely what it was, because you are starting to recognize that feeling of being in meditation. I worked on it years and years and years ago. I've been doing this since 1972, this meditation thing. Really, it's a kind of self-hypnosis, and I drift there and then turn it into meditation. And it is the feeling that you reproduce, and you can actually sink so very, very fast and hit that spot again and function as a channeler. Do it really, really fast. And it is the journaler, it is the person that keeps that journal up to date that has this day-to-day record as to what happened in the past. And it strengthens their capacity, because I think before anything else, you need to believe in yourself. If you never get to believe in yourself that you can channel, you will never channel a message.
Would you say that that's a form of auto-revelation?
I wouldn't know what he was, but yeah, perhaps that's pretty well right.
You know, the Urantia book says that there are two basic kinds of revelation, the epical revelation and the auto-revelation. And the auto-revelation comes from the emerging soul consciousness and the spirit of the Heavenly Father that lives within each human being. So it comes from the inner universe out. That's the way I describe it. It comes from the inner universe out, whereas the epical comes from the outer universe in or down.
Okay, can I put that in my words?
I'll
try and put it in my words and see if you relate to that. I may be talking to Midway Chief Sutu, and the whole thing carries on, okay? And he's not even there anymore. And I know that the source is not the Midway. It's come from somewhere else, and I hear in a very, very clear inner voice, give it to the teacher.
Mm.
In other words, stick the Midway's name on it.
Mm.
It was mine. It's come from within.
Mm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, are we talking about the same thing?
Yeah, I was going to ask you to repeat that because I wasn't sure that I did follow. Would you mind?
Well, I'm working on a transmission, okay? I'm actually channeling a message. And I know that the Midway is gone, but the voice is still carrying on. I'm still getting the information. It turns up in my head and they're not my thoughts. Right? They're someone else's thoughts. And I know that instead of the Midway that has plugged me in and he's standing next to me, it has come from my own mind. And I hear at the end of it, give it to the teacher. In other words, it has come from within.
Right.
The transmission carried on, the channeling carried on. But it is not the Midway that carried on with it. It's come from within.
Well, one of the questions that I have, one of the comments I want to bring up today, especially during this show, is how little that most of us on this planet understand the phenomenon of mind. The phenomenon of mind is greatly expanded and expressed and described in the Urantia book in a way that we've really never had anything close to that level of understanding of what that phenomenon of mind it actually is. And one of the areas where the Urantia book discusses the arenas in which spirit, the daughters of God or the angels, how they work in our midst, is that they describe it as being ideational warehouses, ideational storehouses. Ideational meaning ideas. They are the place where that keeps ideas sort of warehoused. And I think given the new technologies that we have available with the internet and with sort of the virtual world, we are beginning to be able to conceptualize some kind of information that exists out in the ether. And we know what it's like to, quote, log in on your computer to access information on the internet, for example. Mm-hmm. I think that we have still such a small understanding of the phenomenon of mind, the realm of mind, thanks, Lou, in which we experience creativity.
Yeah,
and
I was basically suggesting that this was that some of this information came directly from the higher self.
Right, right. And I mean, for me, I pretty much think of the entire mind, the realm of mind, as also originating from the higher self or the higher source, and that we as children and as young little animal origin beings really just have, a very, very small percentage of that mind that we're actually using. And that as we expand our ability to think really rigorously and to spiritually think in a more peaceful or relaxed way, or as we would say in stillness or in meditation, these are ways we can exercise our mind phenomenon to do different
things.
All right,
and as well log on to the first aspect of the Urantia mind.
Exactly. And when we discover artistic geniuses, or those that we might call prodigies, there are prodigies in all different areas, not just in music or art or science or academic areas. There are people who are perhaps, let's say, psychology geniuses, some people who just understand other human beings at a far higher level than the average, or, people who can see patterns in numbers. And there's so much of this that we don't yet understand. And one of the things we haven't discussed yet today is how genetically some of these particular skills or abilities or access is genetically inherited.
I'm sorry, I didn't think I was interrupting you there. We have a delay on the line. What I was going to say to you was that my maternal grandfather was a dowser. My mother had conversations with what she thought was St. Christopher all of the time, and she was particularly capable of finding lost children. And say, for instance, if over the radio, because that's all there was in those days, the news came that some kid was missing, and if it had actually drowned in a well, she would already know, and the police wouldn't have even found her yet. And all we had to do was look at her and we'd see a tear run down her cheek and we knew it was bad news.
Aww.
Some kid in a well or some kid in a canal.
Hmm.
Hmm. And
you know,
I say that
little boy in Arizona that wandered off into the desert, a two-year-old, and they found him finally 5 days later, and he had died. And, oh, man, he just, you know, they were talking about, you know, how he wandered off. And at first it was an adventure for him, and then when he started to get thirsty or hungry, he realized he was lost. And boy, I wish somebody had been there to help him find that little boy. They searched and searched for him and couldn't find him. But
yeah.
Really
yeah,
sad.
I mean, we see tragedies happen all the time on this world and things that we just can't intervene in time. And I think that one of the gifts that we have as believers, regardless of whether we are believers in one ism or another, or if we happen to have the gift of the one of the higher documented truths like the Urantia book, is that we know that life goes on. We know that death here is really just a temporary glitch, just a temporary blip in the eternal ascension scheme. And so even though it's tragic and it's painful and it's, you know, very grief-producing, very real grief, comes from that, even when you know that life goes on. When the thought of losing a child is devastating to all of us, even if it's not our child, we can feel their pain. But
yeah, she sensed those things. She would know. We would get the news that somebody was missing. All we had to do is look at her face, and the answer would be there. And if there was a big smile on her face, the kid would be found. No doubt about it. It was in instant touch there. But she lived that kind of relaxed kind of life, you know?
Well, we have another caller. Do you want to take another caller?
Sure.
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 This is 303, my area code. 303, you're on the Cosmic Citizen.
Hi there. I'm in Denver, Colorado. My name is Rebecca. And
Hi,
Rebecca.
Hi,
just want to say thank you. Hi, George. It's very nice to talk to you over the phone. I've just now got in tune with finding the 1111 group. I've been seeing these numbers for about 5 years, and I'm really feeling good that I finally found what I was looking for. But now I'm to that point where I'm not really sure how to hone in on what my gift might be or what the message is. And I did just order the Urantia book yesterday, so I'm really excited to pull that open with all the discussion I've been hearing today. I'm glad that I ordered it.
Oh, great, Rebecca. You also should know, Rebecca, that the Denver area along the Front Range has the largest number of Urantia book students who gather together and study and do social events and things. It is most likely going to be the location of the new Urantia University. Which would be the first of its kind in the world. So you're in a very fortunate location if you find that you want to continue studying the Urantia book. Make sure that you reach out to some of the groups in the area there so you can, do it with other people.
Okay. I can't wait. I'm really just looking for some direction on that.
Well, you haven't got your book yet, Rebecca?
No, I just ordered them yesterday.
All right. Well, your chapter 77 and chapter 114 would really be the first ones for you to reach. That's the guys that have been in touch with you for the last 5 years.
Oh, okay. 77
take
and 114.
Take a look at that first. Most people start right at the beginning, and, man, it's awesome, really. It was awesome for me, and, I wasn't exactly born yesterday. It's quite awesome. It's got a lot of stuff in there. But if you skip over to 77 and paper 114, you'll find that you learn a whole lot of things about the immediate guys that have been contacting you.
Okay.
And just to give you a very brief overview of what you can find in the book, The very first few pages is called the foreword, which is sort of a definition of terms, and is very, very heavy, heady, philosophical, mm-hmm. conceptual framework. Don't get bogged down there. Sometimes it takes years before most people can understand those first 17 pages.
Well, you know, I had an opportunity to download the book on an audio version, and I was really surprised to have known pretty much exactly what they were talking about. I think if I'd been reading it, it wouldn't have made much sense because I would have processed mm-hmm. probably in a different manner. But as I was hearing it, I was like, oh, yeah, I know that, you know, and it makes sense.
I'm the same way. I learn better by hearing than by reading, and I'm a voracious reader. But when I listen to the Urantia book on tape, it reaches me in a different place.
Mm-hmm.
And I was also going to say, the first three papers, four papers, we call the God papers. They're really an much, much more expanded God concept. Then it moves into sort of the master universe, the whole paradise program, and it's a much, much expanded version, a vision of what eternity is all about. Then
yeah.
the next part of the book is more about our local universe and about the kinds of things that we learn, the types of teachers and the helpers and the places we go and the things we learn in our local universe. Part three of the book is really the history of our planet and the origin and nature of human beings and their destiny.
Mm-hmm.
And then the last part of the book is the biography of the life and teachings of Jesus.
Okay.
And so for people who are new readers, you can skip around and you can look for the areas that are your greatest passions, the things that you're most interested in learning, the questions you most want answered. And that's one of the ways where being in touch with some other readers can be helpful, because they can help you find some of the things you're looking for.
Yeah. Now, I have a question. That sounds really good. And I do have one question that I want to ask George about your thoughts. I feel like I'm a recovering Christian. And I'm not sure if that makes sense, but
I love that. What flavor?
I don't know, but
recovering Christian.
When I come across some of the readings on the 1111 Progress Group, it talks about this like a one world government and one world religion. Or I've come across that in some readings. I don't know if it was your site, but. I'm really, that stuff really concerns me.
Probably my channeling. I'm sorry. Yeah.
Yeah, that concerns me, because growing up in church, they talk about the Antichrist and this one world government from a conspiracy perspective, and I don't know how to really come out of that thought process of, ooh, maybe this is not where I need to go, but yeah, this is what feels like where I'm supposed to be, with all the numbers calling and everything I'm reading.
Eventually, it is going to work, and it is going to be a benevolent organization. And I think it was Samuel that said that, but I don't remember mostly who said what. I remember what's said. I remember what's channeled once I read the transmit, but I don't necessarily remember who said it. They will be chosen from those people that have looked after many others, you know, have come out of the medical profession or whatever. And there will be a move away from the politician that speaks with a forked tongue. But I think you're going to be looking at another 1,000 years from now. And Rebecca, really... Your teeth won't be itching, for sure.
Mm.
Are you there?
Yes, uh-huh.
Did I just shock you? It's not going to happen overnight, I don't think.
I think it sounds good, and I'm just, you know, still waking up to all of this, and I'm really excited about it, and, you know, there's a lot of buzz about 2012, and... I'm just kind of taking it as it goes, day by day. I don't really know how the energy is going to change with people, if we're going through the DNA change and matching with the earth energy and all of these things, there's almost too much information, and I don't feel like I'm focused enough on...
I can tell you about 2012. The midwayers say it's going to be just as important as the year 2000 bug that was going to stop everybody's computer.
Uh-huh. Right.
Throw it right out. Forget about it. Forget about it completely. They say it's as important as the 2KY bug.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And that was another one of those things that was going to happen. Where are the people that said, you know, all the computers were going to break down? Where are they today? I haven't had anybody come around to me and say, I own up to it, George. It was my idea. I scared everybody off.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And hey, George, I'd like to just take a little bit of a crack, and we do have another call. But Rebecca, I wanted to briefly explain to you, the Urantia book says that through evolution, we will eventually come to one world government with God as sovereign. In other words, there is only one sovereign in all of creation, and that's God. And at some point, the nations of the world will surrender any notion of sovereignty to that greater sovereign. And they explain that it can work just the way the United States of America works, really, that each state surrenders any notion of sovereignty over to a federal government, but then each state can make determination on a state level, but they surrender certain laws over to the federal level. And they kind of give us that as an example of how well a world government could work if it was truly representative and if it was truly in that vein of surrendering national sovereignty over to God, and God alone was sovereign. So then it becomes a government of humankind where every nation of the world can come to the table. No nation is excluded because it's not rich and powerful. And the needs of every nation and the needs of all the world's people would be met, or at least striving to be met. And I think that's why George says, you know, it's a long way off, and obviously it is. It also says that we will evolve a global language and that we will, you know, get to know each other. It says that until we do get to know each other, we won't be able to fall in love with each other, and it's very important that we do get to know each other. Obviously, the World Wide Web is helping that along a lot, but we still have all of these different languages, and there's many barriers to our understanding.
I just want to add, in any language at all, 1111 is exactly the same, and it's working.
Okay.
It is working. We've got Hindus and Muslims and all kinds of people on our list.
You know,
of them would be listening.
Well, I think we have a lot of listeners, but I wanted to say that one of the things about 1111 too is that it's crossing over even into the atheist, you know, the scientific materialist mechanistic atheist group. They are starting to get these prompts, and what's happening is I had a friend who was definitely staunchly in that camp, and he just said, what is this? You know, I don't believe in any angels. I don't believe in any midwares. I don't believe in even in God. And so, you know, I just think this whole thing is complete bunk. And he gave his little 1111 prompt a sort of a challenge. Like, if there's something really spiritual going on here, if there's more to reality than the scientific foundation that I believe in, give me a 1111 that is not a clock prompt. You know, there's nothing that could prevent me from just looking up and seeing the clock at 1111. I mean, how many times do I look up at the clock and it says a different time? Why is it that I just think that 1111 means something special? So prove it to me by showing it to me somewhere else, some other way.
Yeah.
And
well,
within the next 2 hours, he came across 1111 in 10 or 15 different places within a period of just a few hours. And at that point, he said, uh-oh.
Yeah.
I'm really afraid.
I'm afraid that my whole paradigm is going to be shifted, and then I won't know who I am.
Yeah, we're afraid of change.
For people who are having that kind of experience.
We'll tell him who he is, but the midwares have explained that it is, in fact, our ability for pattern recognition, whereas at the same time, they make us wonder perhaps what time it is, or perhaps that we should check that registration tag on a car. That's their part of it. Our part of it is pattern recognition, and they work on that. They actually experience the very same thing. They recognize patterns.
Okay. I have just last question. I'll hang up. Can you guys tell me again who the artist was that you were playing when we first got onto the call? I didn't catch the name.
Pato Banta.
How do you spell that?
P-A-T-O-B-A-N-T-O-N.
Great. Well, thank you. Thank you guys so much. I'll continue listening.
He travels all over the country doing what he calls music ministry.
Beautiful.
Can Google him and find all sorts of stuff about him on the web. There's a wonderful story that he shares on YouTube about how he found the Arantia book.
Hey, Rebecca, he's playing in Denver tonight.
Oh, he's playing
tonight. Yes, that's what I was really wanting to go check him out. So I thank you, ladies, and thank you, George. It was nice talking to you.
Thanks for calling, Rebecca.
I look forward to meeting you sometime.
I know. Is there any place particular where you guys are in Denver where you have regular meetings?
Well, I live in Boulder, and Paula lives in Westminster, and we have a Tuesday night study group at a home in Boulder, and we have another one on Friday night in Boulder, and there are a couple of them around Denver as well.
Okay, so I'll just Google Urantia groups in Boulder.
Well, if you write to the UrantiaFellowship.org, info@UrantiaFellowship.org, you'll get Paula, and Paula is my co-host. So get a hold of her, and we'd love to talk to you.
Oh, great. Thank you so much. You guys have a great weekend.
You too,
Rebecca.
Okay, thanks. Thanks, George.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, Rebecca. Glad you're recovering.
Yes, I'm working on it. Bye-bye.
Bye. We're down to the last 3 minutes. Do you want to
take one more caller? This person has been waiting so patiently. Caller 802, you have something. I'm sorry it took so long. Do you have something you'd like to say to George?
Oh, well, I will say it very quickly because there's only 3 minutes. I'm just so thrilled to actually hear your voice and to talk about the 1111 phenomenon, how the inner teacher works. I just, every time I try to think of a question to ask you, I kind of get the answer.
I get that a lot. I get a message saying, we were going to ask that, and The chief says they're just simply good messages, but sometimes he will ask me to take in a certain lesson or to repost something that is wanted by somebody. I never know who it is, but they usually pop up and they write in and say, thank you, that's just what I needed today.
Ah, that's so nice. Yeah. So it is such a phenomenon. It's been such an incredible influence in my life. And I've also been getting very different prompts. Oh, well, I got 222 and so on for a long time before I figured out that it was Bazutu, right?
Yeah.
So, yes, I'm very
absolutely.
Glad
he gets around.
More.
He turns up in the UK even because we are spread all over the place. That is how it works, you see. Let me see now. When my wife went to the United States last time, there were two midwives traveled with her all the way.
Oh, yeah.
And they announced beforehand that they would be there.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Well, I hope I can come to a state where I'm, you know, working with them even more and more. I also wanted to mention I get another kind of prompt. Because you can't get 777 on a digital clock, instead I do get a lot of 707, 717, 909919. I haven't seen that mentioned by anybody else, but you know, just one of those things. There's so many. There's such a spectrum of messages.
Yeah, such a variety.
Yeah.
Generally, they just want to let you know that they're there, and they can flit in and out within a few seconds, and within a second, they're somewhere halfway across the world. These guys can travel so incredibly fast, almost at the speed of thought.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we're off
the
air.
And they need to.
Yeah.
We are off the air now, and we didn't get an opportunity to say that we that next weekend we're going to be celebrating Jesus' birthday. As for the Urantia book, we know that his actual date of birth was August 21st. So that's one of the things that we'll be celebrating next week.
Actually,
and
that's 2 weeks from now.
2 weeks. Okay, sorry. I'm a little bit calendar dyslexic.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. Okay.
Thank you. And caller, tell us what your first name is.
Oh, this is Nancy from Vermont.
Oh, thanks, Nancy. Wonderful to have you call in.
Yes,
thank
call
you.
Back again.
Call back
again
and
get George on
tell
again.
Your friends about our show.
All right.
Okay. And George, we can still keep talking if you like because we are still being recorded, but we will have to wrap it up pretty soon. The people who download the archive show are able to hear things that happen after we're off the air. So if you have some closing messages or you have some important things that we weren't able to get to on the program, you can see how quickly 2 hours goes by when you're talking about something we're passionate about.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I haven't got anything much to say other than thank you very much for the opportunity. I enjoyed this session. It was good, and I was surprised that quite a few guys that I have got to know over the years actually phoned in. You know, there were a few there that. That have been on the list for some time.
I think we're going to have to do another
show.
There
was, in fact, one of them, Lisa, that worked with Ophelia's for quite some time. She's saying she'd probably be coming back and working with us again. From time to time, people have other things on their mind, other things to do. There may be some emergencies and, you know, but the midwares make sure that there's always enough transmits going around. I don't have to do them all.
Just so that you know, George, we had more listeners on this show than we've ever had before in the history of the program.
Well, that's
tremendous.
In addition,
we had more guests on the chat board than we've had in many months.
Mm-hmm.
And there probably were several other callers who would have liked to have called in, but all the lines were tied up.
Yeah.
Well, and also a few of them gave up after waiting an hour, but I'm glad we did it that way because it gave George a chance to really, you know, say what he had to say.
I think the average person has probably learned more this way than what they would have otherwise.
Yes, right.
Yeah.
And I wanted
well,
to tell
good.
You, you're calling in, guess what your number shows up as? 111-111-1111.
Really?
Did you know that? That's how you show up on the switchboard, all ones.
Oh, they're fooling with it.
I know.
And I also want to thank you personally, George, for being willing to take a risk and come on the show where, you know, didn't really know what was going to be coming at you. And I'm just so grateful to finally have met you after all these years. And I hope we can continue to correspond long into the future.
Tremendous. We'll do
our
very
best. There was a lot of love.
Thank you both ladies for the opportunity. It seemed I spoke to quite a few of my own group there. Well, Are they part of the group? I don't know. We're certainly looking at thousands.
Yes.
And I think you heard also that, you know, quite a few U-books go out there because it's kind of gently suggested.
Mm-hmm. And we realize, too, that not everyone who gets the call is being called to read the 2,000-page book. Some of them are being called to just listen to the gospel. And, you know, there are places where both are appropriate, and there are places when just one or the other are appropriate. But what we do know for sure is that everyone on the planet needs to know that they have a personal relationship with God and that they can better access and grow that relationship through quiet, worshipful meditation, prayer, and just sharing the inner life with God. That's really what it's about.
I learned something the other day which I thought was rather interesting. We were told fairly straightforward, almost bluntly, I would say, that, and I've been kind of unhappy at this point because there's perhaps only about 10 or 12 or maybe 15 of my students that are actually talking to celestials, that are actually seeing celestials. No, the object of the exercise is what needs to happen, and this is what most wanted, is that we train the healers. This place has got to be healed. There is just so many things that are wrong that's got to be put right. And
that's interesting,
and
that you bring that up.
We got 200 healers. We got 200 healers as immediate members of this group.
Well, that's really one of the things that both Paula and I want to talk about, and we're planning to have a show on that in the very near future, including my father, who is a retired physician who believes that allopathic medicine or Western medicine does far more harm than good in situations other than emergency trauma and neonatal and birthing. But almost all of the things that people get put on medication for is frequently causing more harm to the body than it is helping.
Doing good.
So very, very soon, right, Paula? We're going to have a show on the topic of healing. So we hope you'll come back, and we also hope some of your other healers will. And we have a group of ladies in Colorado along the Front Range who are your Rancho book readers as well as spiritual healers. And we would love to find out more from you about, and from Dr. Mendoza, about how to practice that that art or that ministry,
yes.
And how to do it better.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, we're in the process of probably training. This is the CD that goes out from here, and it really is a service, actually. Probably 2,000 or more have gone out. So there's healers all over the world. The CDs have gone out to just about every country in the world.
Mm.
Most people haven't got a clue as to what we've been doing for the last 10 years, Paula. We've been busy.
I think, Paula and I both know we could work 27 hours a day, every day, and we wouldn't even chip away the very, very corner of the iceberg. You know, we really need to have, you know, almost a massive army of ministers and healers, because there's so many people who are in pain.
Well, this is the hub. This is the hub for about 280-odd people all over the world, speaking, maybe the best part of 8-9 different languages.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Pretty awesome, really.
It is awesome.
It's hard to control also because you're dealing with volunteers, you know, and they very often forget that they are working for God, and they think that they're starting to work for you and whatever.
Right. It can be like herding cats.
Yeah. Yeah, herding cats.
But, you know, George, one of my favorite things to do in the world is to manage groups of volunteers. I've been doing that all my life, and it's often without even being aware of it. So, you know, I'd love to volunteer to help with that if I can. It's time for me to go, so I have to hang up. But I just wanted to once again thank you so much for not only joining us on the show, but for staying up half the night in order to do so.
It's only 4 o'clock. The day is young.
The day is young.
Yeah.
Well, bless you, brother.
Thank you.
Thank you, ladies. Thank you, ladies. I got to go, too. I got other things
later
to take care of still.
Thank you so much for sharing your time with us, George. God bless you, my friend.
Thank you very much.
Bye, Paula. I'll talk
and
to you later.
To the platoon. Thank you to the platoon. We love
thank
you guys.
You
big brothers and sisters, we love you.
Big virtual
amen
hugs.
Big
bye
virtual
bye
hugs to our brothers and sisters on the planet
okay
and in the universe.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Guys.
Bye-bye.